Tour Junkies. What is up, golf addicts? David with the Tour Junkies. You have downloaded the Masters 2017 podcast. It is by far our most exciting podcast of the year. We love this week right here in our own backyard, the Augusta National, the Masters 2017. We are joined this week by our friend and veteran podcast, contributor, Stephen Bowditch, PGA Tour Pro, Bowdo, as we like to call him. Bowdo joins us. He gives us some phenomenal insight into a couple of key PGA Tour stat categories, as well as we just make some picks, man. We talk through who we like out of this field here for the Masters in 2017. We give you the strategy that you need for DraftKings, for Fantasy Draft, for FanDuel, whatever it is you're playing. We have got it. And let me let you know, we're recording this on Sunday night, but we have a ton of content coming out on rotogrinders.com in the daily marketplace. The Tour Junkies product there is the shot in the arm. It's $5.99 for the week of Masters, and we have a comprehensive Masters cheat sheet for you. Hopefully, all your screens will be green after listening to this podcast and subscribing to the shot in the arm. We really appreciate the support. Enjoy the show with our buddy Stephen Bowditch, and as always, may your screens be green. It's Masters week.
What is up, golf addicts? It is Masters week. Me and P. Perry are in the house with a very special guest, one of our all-time favorite podcast guests, just all-around good guys, PGA Tour Pro and Tour Junkies podcast veteran, Stephen Bowditch, otherwise known as Bowdo, on the phone. What's up, Bowdo? How are you, man?
What's up, boys? How we doing? Masters week. Can't wait.
Masters in Augusta. I'm ready for it, man. I am ready for it. But before we get into it, Bowdo's going to stick around for the entire show, all 3 hours of it. And before we get into it, we do have to acknowledge that Russell Henley has played his way into the Masters by winning the Shell Houston Open. And for once all year, I had him in my one and done. Now I'm like up to half. I'm like in the top 50% of the field now. Thank you, Russell Henley. But other than that, Pat, any green screens for you this week? Or is it kind of, you still in the dry spell? We need a dry spell update.
No, so dry spell continues, and so does my green
screen.
On
all fronts?
All fronts. There was no green screens. It was pretty terrible. I got caught up in the wave of all the guys that were at the top of the field. I went kind of with a studs and duds approach last week, and that didn't work one bit because we had all these guys just kind of blow up. You know, and that's all right, first question here for you, Bowdo. What do you think? So Steve misses the cut, Reed misses the cut, Stenson misses the cut. Who else was up there? There's a bunch of guys that just, I mean, did they just not care? Or you just think it was just hard, or they just weren't playing well? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the golf course was set up a little different than normal. You know, it was a little damp coming into it. So, we unfortunately got a lot of mud balls too. So a little bit of frustration was probably in there once they knew, you know, that they weren't firing on all cylinders. So the guys approach it so differently, you know, leading into majors. The week before a major is always a tough one for what you guys do, I think, just because, you know, unfortunately, whichever way you want to look at it, the big guys aren't really, they want to play well, but their end goal is to be ready, come a week from Thursday, not the Thursday right. They're at right now. So, I think their prep's a little different. Most of the time when they turn up to these two tournaments in general rather than the week before the majors, they are more primed to win and they've got their eye on the trophy. I think the week before majors is a little different in that aspect. I think, you know, that's why you see some guys that, you know, they're already out of Augusta on a Friday or other guys want to get there Tuesday, other guys want to, you know, play the week before. So, it's just all about how they feel that they can peak at the right time. And you see, this week I saw guys like Stenson and Spieth on the range more than what they predominantly are. And I would just say, for the simple fact that they're not quite comfortable with what they got going, and they want to be firing all cylinders come next Thursday, Friday, just to get in contention on that on the weekend at Augusta.
Yeah, and you know, I did hear that there were some frustration with especially guys like Bubba with the, you know, that they didn't have lift clean in place going on. So I don't know. I could just see if you get sort of, you know, where you're teetering on the edge at the end, and you may not make the cut. You know, let's just put in the work, pack it in, and head on. So that's kind of the way I felt about it. But I don't know. How about you, David?
Well, despite having what I thought were pretty, you know, benign selections from our show last week, we've had a lot of listeners tweet us that they made some money last week. We had one guy take down a pretty nice four digit payout on a GPP. So congratulations to those guys. I guess we just didn't have.
Hey,
the right
sometimes
combo.
You got to have selective hearing, right? You got to hear the right pick.
Well, I tweeted back at him and said, "You basically picked all of our. You took every player that we got right and put him in one lineup." So good for him. But you know, let's move on. Let's move on because it's Masters week. Let's put the shell behind us. Moving on to usually what we handle second on the podcast here being the tweet of the week. And we were discussing beforehand, you know, by the way, Baldo, I don't know if you know this, but you've won the tweet of the week a couple of times. I don't know if you knew that. We were actually going to give it to you last week again with your Masters outfit picture that you tweeted. But we felt like spreading the love a little bit. You'd already won it before, so we gave it to somebody else. But you should feel honored.
I do feel honored, absolutely.
Okay.
I do. I took a lot of time in my Masters outfit. I just wish I had some red underwear there for Sunday. I just couldn't find any at the time.
Do you think Tiger wore red underwear on Sundays?
Oh, he would have had to.
You think so?
I mean, you know, he might have went straight commando. Who knows?
Now, I bet Stevie was. We know Stevie was. He was commando under that caddy bit for sure. The old Kiwi he was. All right, so this week we couldn't land on just one tweet, so we went with the Twitter feud of the week, which was Grayson Murray and a lot of people, but mainly Grayson Murray and Byung-Hun Ahn, who just delivered on Grayson Murray, like, relentlessly on Twitter. Byung-Hun Ahn, I think, gained a lot of fans, a lot of followers, and he kind of came out of his shell a little bit on Twitter. Any reaction from you boys on that whole thing? I mean, Grayson's obviously been one to be pretty outspoken on Twitter, but he caught some heat for his whole Asian European tour playing, moving up the world golf ranking deal. Most people know what we're talking about, but Byung-Hun Ahn just gave it to him. Any thoughts?
For me, I think Grayson is, and I kind of like Grayson. I like how he's more open and honest than a lot of folks out there on Twitter, a lot of tour players on Twitter, but he kind of was treading a little bit in an area to me that he just didn't need to be in because he hasn't even really proved himself at all on tour. So you might want to make a little bit better name for yourself on tour before you start making comments like that. That's my opinion, but it was entertaining to watch. How about you, Baldo?
Nah, I got nothing on it, man. I sent a few tweets. Try and get him to hit the brakes a little, pump the gas.
Yeah, we saw that. That was good.
yeah, I don't know. I mean, he rates himself as a Twitter man, as a Twitter genius. So, we'll see. I actually did see today that he come back online.
It didn't last long.
No, it didn't. I gotcha.
I don't know.
I don't really have an opinion on it, whatever he wants to do.
The best tweet that you fired off at him, because I remember a few weeks back, he said he was going to do a contest for his 5,000th follower or something, or a giveaway or something, and he's up to like 10,000. And you tweeted if he regressed back to 5,000, if you could somehow win that, which is awesome, because he was losing followers left and right. I just want to know where his agent was. Like, what was his agent doing who supposedly asked for his Twitter password a couple of months ago? I don't understand where he was, but
yeah, I don't know. I really don't know. I'm not sure.
God has pleaded the
fifth. Yeah, it's got nothing to do with this. I'm out. I'm waving the white flag myself.
Which was one of your tweets, by the way, right?
Yeah, it wasn't.
Yeah, another one. Basically, Baldo, we're stalking you pretty heavily. I know you know that. You've known that for a while now.
Yeah.
By the way, Baldo, happy anniversary. You know, let's cover this. You know, like, happy anniversary, man. It was a year ago this week on the Sunday night. Pat was at my house. The Tour Junkies was just a fledgling of a podcast. And Pat had stuck his foot in his mouth about you. You came on the show graciously, despite, you know, preparing for the Masters yourself. And Sunday night, we had a great conversation. Pat gave what is still the best Tour Junkies 4 minutes that we've ever had, with the epic Baldo apology that you graciously then accepted. And then just the budding relationship has, primarily between you and Pat, because I know you kind of act like you like me, but you really don't.
It was really the Boys to Men that really put me over the edge. But, you know, that was the,
you're welcome.
You know, it was sort of,
you're welcome.
It was a 50-50 deal, and then Pat really took the reins with our relationship after that.
Yeah. He tends to own it, but stay away from him right now because he is in an epic dry spell. I don't know if you've heard it, but he is really struggling right now. But you know, we appreciate you being a loyal Tour Junkies guy, and you've been on the show a few times even since then. And we're pulling for you. You know, you're our number one podcast bro. And so, thanks for coming on again and for this Masters week. It's easily going to be the most listened to Tour Junkies podcast ever. I think that's pretty safe to say. So I'm excited for it and glad.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us on, and love the you know, really enjoy the relationship it's built into. It's just been fun. Hopefully, you know, let's move on and let's get into the Masters.
Let's get into the Masters.
David, before that though, we just got to talk really quick about the contest last week.
Yeah, the contest it was fun, but it was also kind of ridiculous. You want to tell them what happened?
The listeners out there probably know because we were on Periscope. We had to go three times before we finally got a winner that actually could get a hall pass to come to the freaking Masters, two nights stay, all day on Monday, flight, drink, food, everything, and the first two people bailed on us, which to me, I don't get it. But we found a good winner, I think, except for he's a Florida Gator, but I'm going to let that slide.
Yeah, he is a Gator fan. The first two guys, Andrew Cheek and Barry Hrin, were our first two winners that we had to draw. Neither one of them could get off of work. So literally the world's crappiest bosses. For those two guys, you know, hey boss, I just want an all expenses paid trip to Augusta. You know, I'm going to go the practice round with these guys. I'm going to get two nights free in a hotel. I'm not going to pay for any food. I'm not going to pay for any drinks. I'm going to dinner with these guys and these other cool guys from fantasy draft. And I'm just going to need Monday and Tuesday off. No thanks. You're going to have to give me those TPS reports by the morning. Like, what kind of douchebag do these guys work for? I cannot believe that we had to do that. But I think you're right, Pat. We landed on a really good guy. His name is Michael Riva. He's from Florida. He is a Gator fan. I think he's actually just landed in Augusta tonight. So we will meet Mike in the morning, and we'll be out of the golf course all day. So thank you guys for playing in that contest. By the way, it was very successful. We appreciate it. We hope you guys are enjoying Fantasy Draft as much as we are. For 2 weeks in a row now, I've played more money on Fantasy Draft than I have DraftKings or FanDuel. So the pricing is just so much better. Let's just be honest. So with that said, it's a little what?
I was just going to say, it's a little more even this week, I think, as far as FanDuel versus DraftKings.
Yeah.
But a lot of that, I think, is because they get the pricing out earlier. So
yeah.
There you go. Let's go.
All right. Let's get into the course breakdown, Pat Perry. It's Augusta, right? Like, we know Augusta, but why don't you give it to us just at a high level real quick and talk about weather.
Well,
that's going to be key.
We're going to talk about weather, but I just can't say Augusta right. I'll let Baldo handle that. But we're at the Masters this week, finally at Augusta National Golf Club here in our hometown of Augusta, Georgia. Par 72, 7,435 yards. You got bent grass greens. Again, this is a traditional par 72. You got 10 par 4s, 4 par 3s, 4 par 5s. All the par 5s are reachable. These guys, you know, with the way they hit it today, they should at least, you know, all have a chance to reach these par 5s and 2. You know, again, fairways are important to hit, as they usually are, but here the rough is always down, and so you can look at the bombers. That's going to be what I'm going to be looking at this week, especially with the way the weather's looking. We're going to get a lot of rain earlier in the week. Obviously, this is one of those courses where it's not like every, you know, every week when we have to, you know, we don't really know the course, or we do, but sometimes they change a little bit. But this is the same course every year. I mean, the greens are going to be ridiculous. Putting is going to be key, you know, for me as far as looking at stats. Obviously, strokes gained off the tee, strokes gained approach. And then course history, this is one of the biggest weeks in the year for me when it comes to course history. I just think, I mean, you look at a guy like...
Oh, you love this week, don't you?
I love this week because you have to factor it. You have to. It means a ton. I mean, so for me, course history is probably my number one stat that I'm looking at. Weather-wise, this week is going to be quite interesting. Early in the week, you're going to see a lot of rain. You're going to see, I mean, you may even see hail out there tomorrow. I don't even know. As a matter of fact, I think we had somebody tweet us because they're coming driving 12 hours to come to the practice round tomorrow, and they sent us a message. They said, "Am I going to die out there on the course?" I don't think you're going to die. Just don't, if it starts lightning, you know, just don't stand next to trees or something. But so we are going to get some rain. Thursday and Friday, though, it's going to be nice, but it's going to be extremely windy. I'm looking at 15 to 25 miles per hour on the wind, especially starting up about midday. And then the same on, you know, so both Thursday and Friday, you're going to see the same winds. And so that, to me, is going to play a huge factor. And when you're looking at waves, the tee times this week are a lot different than what you see, you know, because the field is so small. I mean, we got 94, 95 players, I think, now with Russell Henley. So sometimes there's not really a defined morning and afternoon wave. I mean, you may get a guy that plays at, you know, 11 in the morning on Thursday, and then, I don't know, 1 in the afternoon on Friday. So there may not be quite as big of a difference as you see in the regular events on tour, where you can clearly define, you know, when, who's going to be in the afternoon and who's going to be in the morning. Real quick, looking at past champs, we had Danny Willett last year, Jordan Spieth in 2015.
Danny,
who was that, Valdo?
What did you say, Danny who?
Willett. I said Danny Willett. Willett.
Just Danny Willett. What is it? Okay, I got you.
Willett.
Good job.
Willett.
Gotcha.
About has already become David. Like, you're like, now
you
David.
You know Pat does not pronounce stuff well at all.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, Jordan Spieth. Let me get through this, and then you can start making fun of me, Baldo. 2015, Jordan Spieth. 2014, you had Bubba. 2013, you had Adam Scott. 2012,
oh, God.
You had Bubba. And then in 2011, you had Charles Schwartzel. In 2010, Phil Mickelson. So there you go. That is your rundown from a high level this week.
By the way, Baldo, I don't know if you know this, but when the Tour Junkies first started, this was before we kind of met you, Pat famously, like one of the most famous mispronounced deals he's ever done in describing Poana green surfaces during a podcast, literally said, "And the green surfaces this week are POA annua." And I was like, what? Wait a minute.
No.
Wait a minute. POA annua?
I think
that's a real thing. He was dead serious.
Yeah, that was.
POA annua. Anyway, all right, let's listen to our expert here. Because Baldo's been there, done that. He's the pro, right? So what do you think about this weather stuff, man? Have you been, I mean, it is a little, it's rare weather for Augusta, but you know, I mean, with the winds projected to be what they are, what do you think that's going to do? Is that going to change the kind of players that we should look at?
You know, last year when I played, obviously I couldn't bust 80 anyway. Still struggling right now too. But there was a lot of wind there last year as well, if you guys can recall. I think, I don't know, what ended up winning? Down. Six under?
Yeah, it was low. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's pretty easy to, you know, I think it's probably coming out of the west. So what's that mean? The first hole's right to left. Is that right? Top of my head? Yeah, probably. So I think the start is a lot easier with this wind to calm the nerves a little bit. You know, you've got the first hole, which really doesn't make much difference. And then you've got the second hole, you can you know, hit a couple of three woods on if you want with that wind. So you sort of ease the nerves a little bit. But once you turn back around, once you get to four and five, and then make that turn, six to par three?
Yeah.
That's when really all hell starts to break loose. You know, you're up high, you start to hit down. It's the first tee shot you've hit into a breeze, like a real breeze. You're not sure how it's going to react. And then they become left to right winds, which for a lot of people is very tough. Once you get to that sixth hole, and then it's basically hang on all the way through till you get to, you know, sort of 13 and 14. That stretch down that bottom of the valley or whatever everyone calls it down there.
Yeah.
It's just brutal down there. You know, it's just bouncing off trees. And one of the things too that people don't quite realize is that there's no real flags anywhere. There's no real big towers anywhere. So, and if they are, you can't see them because of the pine trees. And the pine trees really don't give out much information a lot of the time. So, you know, it's really hard to judge where the wind is. I mean, obviously you've got your wind map, but once you get down in there, it swirls so much, you know, that everyone's aware of on 12 and 13 and, you know, approach shot into 11, that it's just so hard to judge because it just whips all down there. And at any point it can change on you. So I'm not sure if the wind's supposed to die down a little bit come the weekend, but, you know, you really want to be looking at ball strikers. For one, to have an emphasis on ball strikers, or if not, have an emphasis on short game, you know, approach around the greens, that kind of thing, just because proximity to the hole and par is really going to be a very big stat. Proximity to the hole, no one's really going to be able to get it close. It's going to be a lot of par golf. With par golf comes a lot of, you know, around the greens. So, and especially bunkers, you know, people don't understand with wind and the pins that they put out around that place. Bunkers is very important to have a good bunker game around that game, around Augusta. It's something that is overlooked a lot in stats in general through a week to week, I think. And this week it needs to be looked at pretty hard.
Well, you said a lot of things there that I want to talk through, but it's interesting that you just said the bunker play. I just told Pat, so I was out at the course today. We're recording this on Sunday, the day of the drive, chip, and putt. And I was out on the course, and one of the things that my kids, I've taken my two boys every year to the drive, chip, and putt since it started, and they love getting autographs. They live for it. They don't know who half of the guys are, but they just love the fact that they're getting an autograph. So we camped out right there at the putting green by the driving range, and my middle child, my youngest son, who's a big golf nut, all he wanted was Kevin Kisner's autograph. He just wanted Kiz on his Golby Tour Junkies hat. That's all he wanted, right? Well, Kiz spent, I kid you not, an hour and 15 minutes getting out of the same trap on the chipping area. And there was not one player on that entire golf course, and we sat there almost all day, that did that. Like, I saw Lowry hitting out of the trap. I saw Byung-Hun An hitting out of the trap a little bit. But Kiz, with John Tillery, his coach, Pat, are you proud of me that I got his name right?
Yeah, finally.
Yeah. Kiz, Dwayne Bach, John Tillery, for an hour and 15 minutes hit bunker shots. And I told Pat today, I was like, man, Kiz spent so much time in the trap. And so I honestly about it, like, I know the trap's there, and I know that there's some of them that are tough, but it's interesting that you say that. So that's it definitely kind of, I guess, the wind and the weather and all that you've said does kind of change my perspective as far as guys that, when prices first came out on DraftKings and Fantasy Draft and FanDuel, you know, guys that I was looking at then versus what I'm thinking now is very different. So, you know, you mentioned ball strikers. Do you also mean, like, because I know in our kind of sphere of DFS players, you know, guys are looking at, do I need to look at apex height? Do I need to look at guys who hit it low or hit it high or whatever? So do you think
Where's apex measured from? Like, where's that
kind of the dumb thing. It's measured off the tee. So it's a radar metric off the tee. So really, pointless. I mean, it doesn't mean, I guess you could be a high tee ball hitter, but still be able to flight it low coming into greens. I don't know. So that's why I'm asking you. You're the expert.
Yeah. So I'm guessing that's measured off TrackMan, which it's only on two holes, on the 18 holes out there. And it's only on a driver hole. So it's really a pointless tool, I guess, to a certain degree. You know, it's not really showing, you know, irons and, you know, how you control your flight with irons and all that kind of stuff. Sure, I guess if you want to be pretty broad, that a high ball hitter with a driver could correlate to a higher hitter with an iron. Yeah, I guess. But you know, once you start adding spin and all that kind of stuff in, it really doesn't. You're looking way too much into that. You're better off looking at someone that strikes it well, consistently hits it out of the middle of the face, that is a good ball striker. Someone, you know, someone like a Paul Casey, something like that, that is just nonstop, hits it, just wears the middle out of a golf club.
Nice. All right. Can I ask you another question I have about it? Can you explain to the majority of people that listen to us and hear us talk about stats all the time, the difference in strokes gained around the green and scrambling?
I guess. I mean, I haven't really looked into it too much, but basically strokes gained around the green is, from what I gather anyway, from my quick little look that I did, I don't know, 2 years ago or a year ago, whenever it was, basically how close you hit it from anywhere in. So I think it's 20 yards or 30 yards, maybe. How many times or how close you hit it to the hole, basically. And doesn't count for putting. It is literally how good a chipper are you, like who hits it the closest from on right. any given. Now can that vary? Yes, there's definitely some variance in there. You know, whether a guy might have got plug lies a couple of times and couldn't advance it, so he loses a stroke there. Does he neck one out of the bunker? You know, makes a double where he's normally not doing that. Yeah, obviously. I think if you look. Most stats, if you've got to understand that all the shot length data basically starts from the color of the caddy bib. So it's done with a surveying system. So and that then is then done through volunteers week to week. So there is going to be some mistakes made. Not on purpose, whether it could be someone just put the wrong name on the caddy bib for the wrong color. So, you know, I've seen it a few times with me where I'm like, oh man, I've had a good, you know, let's go have a look at my stats. And I look at them and they're horrific. And then I look at whoever I played with and I know they putter bad and their stats were good. I'm like, okay, so basically the volunteer or the kid just made a mistake last night when he put the wrong, you know, the Velcro, my name, wrong on the caddy bib. And that's how they got it wrong for the whole day. So, you know, there is definitely some variance there in that shot link data. But I would say in general, all your stats, if you wanted to correlate a top 10, you know, a top 10 in any stat category is going to be about right. You know what I mean? It's going to average out, you know, the more times you input the data, the smaller the, you know, the problem is, I guess. So, back to my strokes gain. Yeah, strokes gained around the green is basically the closest that you chip it from anywhere inside 20 yards, whether it be bunker, rough, whatever. And then a scrambling stat is basically if you make a par with missing the green. So
right.
the stat you really want to look at is strokes gained around the green if you're looking specifically for short game. Scrambling stat is basically you hit it very bad and you found a way to make a par. You hit it in the water and you then chipped it up onto the, you know, around the green and chipped it in, or you...
Yes, because it's, got it's it up, you're basically, you know, it's up and down.
It's, yeah, it's literally a whole scramble, a full scramble day, depending on where you put it off the tee.
So you could check out well in scrambling, but you know you hit it to 15 feet and made the putt for par. Yet in stroke scan approach, it's going to be more, you know, how close you are to the pin from your first shot off the green, right?
Yeah, so let's
around
say
the green. Yeah.
Let's say you. I don't know. I don't even know how to explain it. So let's say you hit a tee shot and it goes, I don't know, in the water. You take a drop and then you hit it on the green, make the putt. That won't show up in your short game. That'll show up in your scrambling. Now, if you do the same, hit it on the green or leave it on, if put it on the green, three putt, that's not going to show up in scrambling. That's going to show up in your strokes gain putting, because all strokes gain has nothing to do with the score you have on the hole. Strokes gain is from that distance against the field, what you are with that one particular shot. That's it. There is no score to be had with strokes gain. So strokes gain is actually, is it correct? I don't know. I haven't looked into it that much, but the baseline is what, if you're talking strokes gained off the tee, is, you know, whatever that may be, strokes gained approach, how close you hit it from a certain point that they measure against the field. If you hit it to 15 feet and the average is that week and the average is 18 feet, whatever that equates to, 0.125 of a stroke gained, and you just keep totaling them up. Whether that's for triple or whether that's for birdie or eagle, it doesn't matter. It's that
doesn't matter, particular shot.
Yeah.
Where
scrambling basically means who makes the less bogeys at the end of the day.
This is exactly why I'm more of a recent form in course history guy. This whole conversation we're having right now, but that's just
that's how I read it anyway. I'll probably way off base. I don't know, but that's how I read it anyway. So
well, and I think it's I wanted to ask you specifically about the scrambling around the green thing, because you know I feel like, especially at Augusta, that's, you know, being able to do that is important. I mean, I think that's why you see guys like Spieth, who are just incredible scramblers to me. You know, that's why you see him have so much success here. So that was a key stat for me when I'm looking at, you know, kind of the type of player that I'm looking for. So that's an interesting discussion.
I think scramble is scrappy.
Yeah. Yeah. Little Patrick Green, too, right? Like, he would fit in that category.
Yeah, something like that. Exactly. Yeah, scrap out a score, basically, is what a scrambling stat is.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, well, we could have a whole podcast on this, and maybe one day, if Baldo is super bored, we will. I think it's time to get into some prices. So, you know, as we've done the last few weeks, we've got FanDuel and Fantasy Draft, and in addition to DraftKings, obviously DraftKings has the larger contest this week, including the first Millionaire Maker of the Year. They're on DraftKings for $33 per entry. You guys can check that out. However, you know, I'll definitely be looking at other contests. That's for sure. I mean, we're going to play some in the Millie Maker, but I do think there is definitely a strategy to playing in some of the lower dollar contests on DraftKings as well. And then watching for overlay on Fantasy Draft and FanDuel, there's been a little bit of that. So be on the lookout for that. But for the most part tonight, let's talk GPP or tournament play only. As you've got most players listening that may not be regular listeners are probably only playing GPPs. So let's start right at the top with DraftKings. You've got four guys in the four-digit range, and that is Jordan Spieth at 11.5, DJ at 11.3, Rory at 10.6, and Day at 10.2. And those are the top four guys on all three platforms, Fantasy Draft, DraftKings, and FanDuel. So, you know, and Rory and Day are both the third and fourth guys. You've got DJ and Jordan switched on FanDuel. So I want to get both of you guys as far as like who you like out of that one, just like one player out of that group. If you were going to commit to one player, who would that be? But I also want to ask you about Jason Day and what you feel about, you know, obviously the unfortunate situation about his mom and her recent surgery, which it does seem like she seems to be recovering well, but where do you think his game will be this week? And do you think he's one to be messed with or not this week? So who do you guys like in that top tier? We'll start with you, Pat.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think for one, Dustin Johnson is going to be the highest owned. I don't think there's any question about that. And you know, again, we're talking GPP, we're talking the Millie Maker, things like that. I think he'll still be the most highest owned. But if you want me to give you one guy, to me, it's Rory. I think I like his price there at 10-6. I think he could be a little bit higher than that, but I'm right there with him. And he's one of those guys that I just feel like it's just going to happen with him in the Masters. And, you know, he's been close. To me, I think, Baldo, actually, you asked this question on Twitter maybe a day or so ago on who of, you know, maybe the top four you thought was the most dominant player when they're on. To me, it's Rory. I think he is the most dominant player when he is on his game in all facets. So Rory is going to be one of my top plays this week. I love him. You know, he's got good course history. His recent form is pretty good. So that's going to be my pick. If you got to ask for one, he's the one.
All right, Baldo, what say you?
Can I go to Fowler?
Fowler? Oh, you want to jump down to Fowler? For real?
Yeah, that's who I think is going to win.
No, there you go. Well, you can. Actually, David picked him to win on a show. We got interviewed on last week, and he was your pick to win.
Yep,
he was. Yeah.
So why do you say that? Why do you say that about it?
Everything he's doing to me is just, you don't see him out as much anymore, like practicing. He's worked out his best way to play the best golf all the time. I think he's basically learned about himself, which is part of the process. You know what? You know, so some guys, you know, you can take VJ's approach, for instance. Some guys love hammering the gym and then hammer. You know, I just think the Fowler has really found his niche on how to play well and how to play well at tough golf courses at the top level. You know, ponder this year, stuff like that. I just love the way he's playing. His strokes gained approach, his iron play. It's just everything's trending in the best direction. Now, has DJ found that as well? Absolutely. But I just think that, yeah, Fowler's my man this week. Yep.
Does it bother you at all with Fowler that he missed, you know, missing the cut last year? He played pretty bad last year. And as you said earlier, it was in a little bit windier conditions. Obviously, we had lower scores last year. Does that concern you at all, or you just throw that out?
No, not at all. I mean, if he kept playing, if he kept playing to my level and shooting 80 every week like he did last year, and turned to the Masters this year and still playing that way, yeah, sure, it'd concern me. But no, he's since that day, what's he won another couple of times and won probably three times since then around the world. So no, he's fine. Played well last week or this week. Where are we at?
Michelle, yeah.
So, that doesn't concern me one bit at all. So.
All right. So I love Fowler too. I like three guys in the 9K range a whole lot on DraftKings. But Baldo, I want to put you on the spot. One guy in the five digit range. Who are you taking?
One guy in where?
One guy in the five digit range.
Dustin.
DJ, yeah. Yeah, I kind of feel the same way. So, I mean, so on the Jason Day thing, like, do you have a sense of what Jay Day is going to come out and be ready to do come Thursday?
It'd be a complete guess. I really don't know. I mean, I know how strong he is mentally. I know it seems a little bit strange with, you know, his withdrawals and stuff like that, but it's just not really that true. You know, once I paired with him at President's Cup, I could see an intensity level that I had never seen in anyone before, and how how hard he works on the golf course mentally and all that, he's going to be ready to play mentally. Is his golf swing? I don't know. I hope so. I'd love to see him get out there and put the green jacket on. Couldn't think of anything better. I'm just not completely sold until I sort of start seeing him, you know, on the range, start swinging it and see where he's at.
You know, it's one of those things, like, the Masters is so full of stories. It is one of those things where, like, a part of me is like, man, you know, I know how much, well, I don't know, but I've heard how much influence Jason Day's mom has had on him and, like, what she's meant to his golf game and the fact that he's gone through this in these last couple weeks. It just feels like one of those times where he's going to tee it up on Thursday and just rip it to shreds. There's a part of me that thinks that story could come. But I guess if you look at it completely, you know, logically or objectively, you know, I think DJ is clearly playing better than anyone in the world right now. And I'm with you there in the top range on any format. I think DJ is your guy. So if we get down into the 9K range on DraftKings, you got Hideki, Stenson, Fowler, as we've already talked about, and Justin Rose. Pat, what do you think about the 9K range? And anybody else in that little range that you're digging?
Well, actually, you know, and Ballo kind of did this. I think there's, you know, especially in a GPP, you can easily just avoid the top four and drop down to here and start a lineup. And I would start
Absolutely.
Right there at the top there at Hideki at 9,900. I mean, he is one of my favorite players in this category. I'm with Baldo and you on Fowler, but Hideki for me, again, he's got good course history here. I think his ownership percentage will be a little bit lower because his recent form hasn't been, I mean, he's been pretty good, but not great. He's number one in par five birdie or better scoring. So to me, I love Hideki. I think he's a great price either on fantasy draft or DraftKings. I'll throw out a fade though here, and I think it's an easy fade. I think Stenson at 9,500 is just an easy fade for me. Does not have good course history. He's been—I don't know what his issue is lately, but just hasn't been playing that great. So I think if you're going to fade a guy, definitely fade Stenson at 9,500. I wouldn't even pay attention. There you go.
Well, I'm in total agreement on Matsuyama. I had him kind of circled last week. I saw him playing a little bit today as well, even on the drop, chip, and putt. Saw him play number one. But five of his last eight rounds at Augusta under par. And you know, on some of these easier golf courses that we've seen lately, that's not out of the question. But at Augusta, if you do the research of guys who have fired under par rounds, In the last few years, for example, you just mentioned Henrik Stenson. He's only fired 9 of his last 20 rounds under par at Augusta National, whereas Hideki's 5 of his last 8. I think the golf course suits him. I really like Hideki at that 9,900 mark. I do like Fowler as well, but I'm with, like, you could put... So the other guy I really, really, really like is Justin Rose. So I'm pretty much on board with everybody in the 9Ks except Stenson. Rose, 10 of his last 20 rounds under par at Augusta National, with only 6 of those being over par in the last 20. So Rose clearly enjoys this golf course. Something about it suits him. I really like the form he's in. You could start a lineup, Hideki, Fowler, and Rose, and you still have $7,200 left on DraftKings. That's like Lee Westwood, Cabrera Bello, Bill Haas territory. So to me, that's pretty nice.
Yeah, I agree too on Rose. I mean, you look at him, 8 straight cuts here, 4 of those at the top 10. So I think, again, you can't go wrong with those guys. So I love this 9 category. I think besides Stenson, I'm with you.
All right, so let's get into the 8. Well, actually, Baldo, anything else on those other 3 guys we mentioned, Stenson, Hideki, and Rose?
Nah, I got nothing there, boys. Sorry, I just think Fowler's the man.
You're on with Fowler. I like it. All right. Let's get into the 8K range. We've got Justin Thomas, Adam Scott, Phil, John Rahm, the Spaniard, first-timer, just lighting the world on fire here lately. Bubba, your 2-time defending champ, Sergio, Reed, Usti, and Snedeker. Pat, I will throw it to you first. Anyone in the 8K digit? In the 8Ks that you're digging. I mean, I think
I don't know. It might be one of these dead ranges if everybody's liking those three at the nines.
Wow, you're throwing it to me first every section here. You put me on the spot. So
you got to be on your A game. It's Masters Week, man.
So here's the thing. This is when it's going to start a little bit of a theme for me, because I think that, you know, we haven't had a first-time winner since the year I was born, and that was Fuzzy Zeller in 1977. So if you listen to the show, you know, I'm 40 years old, so that was 40 years ago. I think this could be the year you might see that happen again. And John Rahm is one of the guys that could do that at 8,600. So I do like him this week. You know, he's just, again, recent form incredible. And we saw him at the match play. You know, he took DJ, just went head to head with the number one player in the world. And I think this is a course he should eat up. Now, I do think, as I've said, course history is a big deal. You've got to know this course. But he's just, to me, the type guy, I think he's going to prepare right for it. He's going to do the things that he needs to do. He's going to be able to, you know, attack these par fives. So, for me, John Rahm is my top play in this 8,000 category. I do love Mickelson. He's been playing really well this year. Obviously, he's got great course history. Putts well. He's a good scrambler. Checks the box on par five birdie or better. So I think Mickelson's another, you know, kind of an easier play here in this 8,000 range. And I don't know. There's a couple more I really want to throw out that, well, here's one I think for a GPP play. And you're going to hate this. But I think I'm going to play some Bubba Watson this week at 8,400. Obviously, he's a two-time champ here. Loves this course. Should be able to, basically plays as a par 68 for him. So I think Bubba is a good GPP play. Maybe it's a reach. Maybe it's a par 70, but still, I think Bubba's a good GPP play, even though his recent form has not been that great. But it's just one of those things where sometimes guys find form when they're on the course that they love, and this is one of them. So there you go. I got a few more, but I'll let you run with it.
All right, Baldo, what do you think?
I'm going to go. All right, so I saw Adam Scott this week a little bit, and he's changed his ball flight and his golf swing a little bit. He's shortened it up, and his ball flight's lowered. I know he lives for majors, and that's really it. I think that he has been looking into the weather the past, you know, week or two, and trying to lower that ball flight a little, just because he sees what it's going to take this week. I think he's an interesting player. I know he didn't have much success at all. I mean, he shot 4 under the first round last week, and then, you know, I think I even beat him in the second round. Yeah, I think he's a very interesting play. His swing looked unbelievable to me. What I saw on the range and how he'd shorten it up a little bit.
Doesn't his swing always look unbelievable, though, Bada?
Yeah, I mean, it does, but I think he's taking it to one more level now, flattened his ball flight out, and I believe it's just made for this week. And then the other one, I love Sergio.
Yeah. I'm with you there on Sergio.
Just because of straight ball striking with this weather. I mean, now if the weather wasn't like this, I probably wouldn't be as high on him. But I really do like him this week. I really do. I'm not sure how his putting stats have been this year. I mean, they're probably floating around, probably level somewhere around that. You know, strokes gained. So you know that's really Sergio's big play. But with this weather, I don't think it's gonna matter as much. You know, it's going to be more predominantly on ball striking and. And he is one of the best in that area.
I'm with you there, too, on Sergio. I think he is a very good play this week. David, what about you?
Well, I'm...
See, David's in the... David likes to put himself in the best position about it. So, like, he listens to me, then he listens to you, and then now he can go from there. So it'll be pretty easy for him. So go ahead, David.
You guys are the experts. That's why I'm letting you guys roll with it. No, I actually, John Rahm, I think, is interesting.
I think he's going to be a little inflated in ownership just based on recent form. And don't get me wrong, I love John Rahm, like love him. But I don't know. I think it might be a good week to fade him. Just, I'm not saying a complete fade, but I think just to fade him based on the first-timer history at Augusta, which you mentioned there, Pat. By the way, we'll be on a radio show with Fuzzy Zeller on Tuesday. We'll be hanging out with old Fuzzy. Might bring him That's a right. bucket of fried chicken when we walk up there just to have a little poke.
Oh.
And then, of course, I do agree with Adam Scott. I actually had him highlighted. He is a value on DraftKings. If you look at Fantasy Draft and FanDuel and DraftKings, he's a little lower on DraftKings at that $8,800 mark. So if you were kind of on the fence about Adam, if you wanted to play him, I think he makes more sense on DraftKings. The only other guy that I'm really interested in here is actually Louis Oosthuizen. I think he's always a pretty decent GPP play in majors. He just doesn't seem to be, I mean, people just don't really get on Louis a whole lot. I don't know, you know, for what, you know, I mean, I know he withdraw. He has had a tendency of withdrawing a little bit, but he doesn't do that at majors. He's had some success here at Augusta. He's $8,100. Five of his last 12 rounds under par at Augusta and only three over par. So I think to me that kind of speaks to a guy who can play well in difficult weather. I mean, three of his last 12 rounds on a difficult golf course over par. So if it's going to be, you know, par golf, then which Baudo said in the beginning, I like Louis at 8,100 as a good sneaky play there. So there you go, Pat. Is that sufficient enough for you?
Yeah.
All right, I'll start off.
Usti was on my list too, so I'm with.
Okay.
You.
Okay. I'll start off.
Let me start with the seven. There's a million of them.
Okay,
and
lovely.
I'm just going to do my first three. How's that? And I'm
okay.
I mean, obviously, it's a wide range. Taking a look at it.
Yeah.
I love my three top picks out of this seven range: Schwartzel, Casey, and Peters. They are my, and very high on Casey. He's my, I'm not going to say dark horse because he's poor Casey, but I think he is going to be right there in the mix this year. I really do. I've played with him at Arnold Palmer practice rounds, and he's finally comfortable with the changeover from equipment from Nike to whatever he's using now. And he was starting to hit it, the Paul Casey of old. And then Charles Schwartzel has been playing great, and then Thomas Peters is, I think, soon to be definitely a top five player in the world. So they're really my three picks, and I'm done in that 7K range.
Battle out. Well, all right, Pat, I'll go next so you can go last.
Okay.
I have Paul Casey highlighted as well. He's the 20th player on DraftKings. He's the 15th on Fantasy Draft and FanDuel. So kind of like Adam Scott, another value on DraftKings, particularly with Paul Casey. Charles wasn't on my radar. And then Thomas Peters, I mean, the first timer, we know he bombs the mess out of the golf ball, but I'm shocked Baudo's is high on Peters. I kind of like Tyrrell Hatton at 7,600, another first timer, but at least he's definitely shown to me better form than Peters here lately. If it gets a little windy, I could see it happening. So I like Tyrrell Hatton at 7,600. One of my favorite plays of the week is at 7,500, and that's Brooks Koepka. I think Brooks, who's been in horrible form, is a fantastic GPP play here. He's only played Augusta twice, I believe. I think he's top 30 and top 20 something both times. I don't have it in front of me, but I just think Brooks could turn it around right here. I guess it's more of a gut call for me with Brooks, but I've been thinking that he's going to turn this thing around here pretty soon. Another one for me is Shane Lowry. To me, I think he plays he's another kind of tougher golf course, windy conditions kind of guy, being from Ireland. Hopefully that's the case. 7,300. I like Shane Lowry. I saw him actually out there today. He was grinding on the chipping range and spent some time in the bunker as well. So I'll stop there and get in kind of that mid 7K range. This is a big range, so we'll save the bottom half. So Pat, what about the top half of the 7K?
Well, I'm with you both. I think Casey is totally with you, Baldo. He's my favorite play in that seven range. Again, if you look at him, just great recent form. Course history is good. I think 78 to me is just way too cheap for him. So I'm with you there. And with you on Peters. Again, I think that this is a year that a first-timer could win, and I do believe he will be top five in the world at some point. And you know, he checks the box for me on par five birdie or better percentage. His putting is good. So I think that you know, those two guys are my favorite. I'm with you, too, on Hatton. I think, you know, you just look at the way he's been playing lately. It's just been fantastic. Great putter. Checks the box on strokes gained off the tee. So, you know, 7,600 for him is a good price. So that's the top end of the range that I do. I'm with you both on those three guys.
All right. So let me ask you this. In the 7,500 and above range, other than Tiger, is there anyone in this category you would fade Baldo?
All
right. Pat, anyone you would fade?
All right. For me, it's going to be, I'm going to fade last year's champ, Danny Willett.
Agree. Yeah, right there with you.
I cannot play him the way he's been playing.
Yeah. You know,
there you go.
Here's the thing, though. You guys talking about these first-timers. You talked about John Rahm. You and Baldo both with Thomas Peters. I don't understand why in a potentially difficult year with wind and weather being a factor, why a first-timer has, you guys say, like, this could be the year. Like, I would think that would be the case if it were a hot, you know, a birdie fest and conditions were perfect at Augusta and Peters could take advantage of just bombing his way around the golf course. But that may not be the case. And if it's par golf and he's got to putt his way, you know, around Augusta and he's never played, I don't really know how that's the case. I'm just playing. I'm not playing devil's advocate because I disagree. So I'm just disagreeing.
Well, for me, it's just because I think that the volume of guys that are good players are in is their first time. So you got guys like Rahm, Peters, Hatton, you know, like Adam Hadwin, we'll get down to in the sixth range, that's just playing incredible. I think there's guys out there, and I know this is a course. I mean, I've said it. I mean, this is the course you got to know to be able to play well on. But I think the quality of players who are on, you know, are here for their first time is greater than for me that I've seen in several years. That I think
I agree with that.
First time.
I agree with that.
And that's not the only reason.
Completely agree.
Yeah, I agree with that for sure. But still, Baldo, doesn't that make sense? Like if conditions were perfect and it was a birdie fest, isn't it more likely for a first timer to win than what we're looking at right now?
No, I'd go the other way. Just for the simple fact that it's so much easier to play par golf and to win a major with par golf. You know, to win any golf tournament, really, you need on the back nine, you need pars most of the time to win, because at some point, you know, nerves are going to take over. And with the wind up and the ball strikers they are, these guys you're talking about, it's going to be par golf. So I just think it's just so much easier to win with par golf than what it is to win with birdie golf. But birdie golf, you've got to attack it a little more. You've got to be more aggressive with driver. Things can happen on the back nine a lot more easier than hitting it down the fairway or, you know, missing the green and getting it up and down. I think these guys have the short game and the putting or the ball striking to really win that. You know, to me, it's going to be between 6 and 10 under to win this golf event. So more than likely, you're going to need on the back nine, if you're anywhere in contention, you know, anywhere from 1 over to 3 under on that back nine. And we all know that back nine can jump out at you, or you can shoot, you know, a long way under par, but you really need par golf coming down that stretch, you know, 13 through or 12 through. It's just all got to be par golf, and you're going to be right there come the 18th.
All right, so there's four first-timers that I can find in the DraftKings $7,000 range. It's clear that both of you guys are pretty big on Thomas Peters, so he's one. But of the remaining three, you have Tyrrell Hatton, Alex Noren, and Hudson Swafford. Pick one of those guys out of those three, Hatton, Noren, or Swafford. Who do you like?
I got Noren.
Okay.
Yeah, for me, it's probably Noren, too. Now, Are you
wait a minute.
Going
as good
whole...
as you just said, as you just talked about Hatton.
Yeah, but we haven't even gotten to Noren yet.
Hatton is playing so freaking well. Like, that shocks me. Look at his game log. A
so
fourth, a tenth, a fourth, a third, a 13th. No, Noren is not playing as well as Tyrrell Hatton.
I just, again, you know.
49th, 55th, 21st, 13th is Noren. I'm shocked that, I mean, Hatton is just
why
is
you
throw so
why
like that.
What are you why are you forgetting isn't this Fleetwood's first year too? Or are you just talking in this category?
I don't think this is Fleetwood's first, or is he in the 6K? I didn't go down to 6K. Is he 6K?
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, Dotto, I meant to tell you something funny. Your boy's with Rod Pampling, aren't you?
Yeah.
My oldest came back with he's got a new Tour Junkies hat. It's one that we don't have out on the shop yet. Hopefully it's more popular than the one we sent you. And he comes running up to me. Dad, I got this autograph. He was so nice. I don't know who he is though. And I'm like, well, where was he? And he points to him, and it's Pampling. So it's the only autograph on the Tour Junkies hat that my son has is Rod Pampling. So my oldest has a Tour Junkies hat with Rod Pampling, and my middle one has one with Kisner. And that's the only autographs on the whole hat. So props to your boy Pampling. I also thought about that because Tommy Fleetwood was easily the nicest guy at the Drive, Chip, and Putt today with all the kids. Like, I was standing there listening to him. There were like 15 kids lined up getting autographs, and Fleetwood just like stopped and said, he looked at all the parents that were kind of sitting around, and he was like, I am getting as much out of this as your kids are. I'm so grateful for you guys. Thank you so much. I'm signing everybody that's standing right here. Like, I heard it with my own ears. It was awesome. Props to Tommy Fleetwood, but I'm not taking him for the Masters. So. That's that.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, but Fleetwood's awesome. I mean, he's a great player, obviously, and we're starting to see that. I think it's a really good play. I don't even know where he's priced on there, but yeah, he's it mightn't be this year, but he's definitely a top 20 player in the world soon. Yep.
Yeah. All right. So if you get down to that lower sevens, to me, the sevens is just chock full of value here. I mean, Lee Westwood, who has an incredible amount of history here, 11 of his last 20 rounds under par at Augusta. $7,200. Cabrera Bello, $7,200. Bill Haas, who's, you know, Bill Haas like lives for Augusta. He's never missed a cut here. Doesn't have a whole lot of rounds, doesn't have a whole lot of like low rounds, but he seems like one of those guys who's going to get those pars. So he seems fairly consistent to me. So in the, let's round out the 7K range. Is there anybody in that 7K range, Pat, that you're interested in, that we haven't talked about?
Now, I think for me, Matthew Fitzpatrick is going to be a big play for me this week. I like him. He's kind of sneaky long, kind of a little dude. But
sneaky long, really?
He's got some length. I mean, I'm not saying he's, you know, Bubba or Rom or DJ or
Baldo.
But the guy, you know, he can play. He finished 13th at Arnold Palmer, you know, 16th. Well, that was WGC, so smaller than that. I think he could be a pretty kind of sneaky play this week, right in that range where there's some other good guys, kind of a good pivot play. So I would not sleep on him. You know, you look at, last year he was tied, T7th. So again, he's obviously had a good finish here. So I think that'll be one guy that I'll throw out other than, I do like Westwood. I'm totally with you there. So now I'll let Baldo round us out here.
Yeah, I don't really. I mean, right around that seven mark, nothing's really. The only one I keep looking back at is Andy Sullivan. I think Andy Sullivan, with this weather and the way he obviously putted on fast greens last week, I think around that range there, he's probably my biggest, my best, between him and Knox right there. Just because he's a controller of the golf ball, you know, he'll manufacture golf. He's sort of an old school player, like a Kelson, you know, someone like that that just sort of, I don't know how the best to describe it. I guess if you want to think Corey Pavin, you know, just sort of gets it around, plays to his strengths, putts it great, controls it, chips are good. You know, I think he's a pretty solid player right there, Andy Sullivan, and Russell Knox is a very similar player.
Interesting. Well, I pretty much mentioned the guys that I'm liking. I mean, I really like Westwood. I think he's a good value at 7,200. He's a better value on DraftKings than he is anywhere else. I think Cabrera Bello, Bill Haas are both interesting to me, especially with about a kind of alluding to this par golf idea. I think Bill Haas is even more attractive. I was a little off of him in GPPs earlier in the week, just thinking it might have been a bomb and gouge kind of year. But with the wind picking up, I think Haas could be a pretty safe bet at 7,200. You've got a good cut making kind of guy. So interesting there for Bill Haas. Let's get into the 6K range. I think right off the bat, I mean, I'll start. I think Kisner is easily one of my favorite plays this year. He's in good form. Kisner, I know, wants to play well here for sure. Grinding it out, second at the Arnold Palmer, 11th in Mexico, at an event where a lot of the bombers were killing it out there at WGC Mexico. So I think Kisner at 6,900 is probably one of my favorite plays. And actually, I think out of all the first-timers, the first-timer I like the most is Adam Hadwin at 6,900. I would take Hadwin over any other first-timer in the field. And I think I don't know how much of a ball striker he is, Baldo. You could probably tell us that. But I do know the guy can putt the lights out of the golf ball. And he seems pretty confident in form. Sixth place finish at Arnold Palmer after winning the Valspar. So what do you guys think about Hadwin, Kiz, and anyone else in that kind of top 6K range?
Well,
I completely agree. I mean, Kiz is starting to find his form again, obviously. Hadwin, have to agree, you know, one of the best putters going around right now. I think the two that no one, I mean, everyone's a little bit skeptical, I guess, of his wrist or his arm or whatever, is Molinari there. I think that's way too low for Molinari. And Chappell too, you know, Chappell's starting to, I don't know what he finished this week, but he started to get that, I was hitting balls next to him, and started to get that solid sound back that most golfers look for. Means he's starting to strike it well. So I think there's definitely some value there. And really, that's really all. I mean, if you want to go to Cabrera, you can always go Cabrera. What did he finish 20th last week? Is that time of year for him?
Yeah.
So, you know what I mean? I don't know. I mean, if you want to go down there, sure. I mean, those few plays there and that high sixes, I get a case for all of them.
All right, well, what about you, Pat?
No, I'm in agreement. I mean, Kiz is my favorite play here, and then Hadwin's right up there with. You know, I don't know if I would agree with you that he's the top first timer in the field, but I'm totally with you on that he could easily play well here. Obviously, you got to putt well on these greens, and he is just probably been the best putter on tour so far this year. So I'm with you there. You know, I think, again, I don't know. One guy I will throw out that I think could be just kind of an interesting flyer GPP play would be Chris Wood. And that's mainly just because the guy just bombs it all over the place. And if you look at his recent form, it's been pretty good. You look at his last three events, he's been top 30. So I think, you know, again, I don't know. And this is his first time too, right? I think this is his first time.
No, this is not Chris Wood's first time. He was there last year for sure.
Oh, he was here. Okay, so
yeah.
Anyway, I think again, 6,500. I don't know. Could be worth a flyer. I'm totally with Baldo though on Molinari. I think that is. I'm not sure I understand the price there for him. So, So there you
call
go.
Him today.
And I'm not really
he is tiny. He's a tiny man. Baldo could put Molinari in his pocket, take him along for a ride. He's a really small person. What do you think about Johnny Vegas, Baldo?
I mean, one of the best names in golf.
Really?
Johnny Vegas?
I mean, so he's got a good name.
Yeah, I mean, I don't.
Yeah, but
I,
it's spelled J-H. That's confusing as hell.
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I've played a fair bit of golf with him. When he gets going, he's a tremendous ball striker. I mean, ridiculous to watch. Struggles a little bit around the greens from what I can tell, but, you know, when it's on, he wins. As he's brought, he's won twice now, three times. You know, he's very hot and cold, but very, very, very good iron player. Flights at low, gets a lot of spin. So sort of between those two, if you're looking for something down in that range, yeah, I mean, I'm all for it. I mean, you know, I'll go. I've really only got two left when we start going down lower, and I think Kelson is awesome. I think that's way too cheap with this wind and par golf and using your brain. And then the last one, when you go way down, that is if you want to stack, you know, if you want to stack, Trevor Immelman's starting to show some form. He hasn't played much, but when he's played, he's, what was he, made two cuts and finished 20th or whatever. He finished in Puerto Rico, and he's, you know, second lowest priced on there. So, I mean, between him and Kelson, I think you can make up some serious good teams using those and flip the coin.
Man, I did not see a Trevor Immelman pick coming tonight.
I did not. But I do like Thorin. I like the Thorin
Kelson. My next question was going to be, give me the lowest guy you would take. Let's just say in the Millie Maker, which you're going to have to get really creative, like, because there's so many people entering. So a Trevor Immelman lineup could very easily win the Millie Maker. So, Pat, what about you? What is the lowest player you would take in the Millie Maker? If you were playing the Millie Maker, what's the lowest you would go?
For me, it'd probably be Kelson at 6,500. I just don't know if I can get. Yeah, Longer's sitting there right there at 6,400, but I actually think the ownership on him might be a little bit higher than you would typically see, just because of his you know, recent form, and then obviously course history here. So I think if I'm going to go kind of a flyer pick for GPP reasons, Kelson's going to be my guy at 6,500.
There you go. I really wanted to go Sean O'Hare, but I don't like his form now. I kind of like Sean O'Hare. He's played here. He played here 3 years
hair?
In a row back in.
Do you like his hair? You like his hair? I mean, I know you like hair, you know, like product and everything, right?
That's stupid. No. I guess I'll go Kelton as well. I mean, he was in contention a little bit, third round last year. I remember seeing his name up on the leaderboard. Kind of scratching my head a little bit on this guy. So I think if the weather is poor, I think Kelton is interesting. I think as low as I'll go. I don't know that I'll really try any Trevor Immelman, but that's interesting. Very interesting. About it.
I don't know what he ended up finishing Puerto Rico, and then also at, where did he play? API, I think, or was it Travelers? One of the two. Where he just missed the cut there, or even made it. I don't know. I just watched him swing at Puerto Rico, and then where he finished, made a lot of birdies.
Puerto Rico, it shows he missed the cut at Puerto Rico, but it
no, he missed
like
the cut at Puerto Rico.
He was even par. He was even at Puerto Rico. Five birdies.
I see his stats there. So he had round one at Arnold Palmer, shot it under par, tough day in the morning. And then Puerto Rico shot level par for 2 days, missed by one. So I just see a lot of upside there if you're looking for, you know, if you want to go down that low. That's all. Yeah.
Now, you know, we forgot to mention a couple of the guys that have not been added to the DraftKings field yet, which I do think is important. You've got, obviously, Russell Henley coming off the win at Shell Houston Open. Hanahara, who took DJ to the last hole at the WGC match play a couple weeks ago. You've got the fellow Aussie Mark Leishman, and then you've got Ross Fisher are yet to be added to the DraftKings pool. Any thoughts on those four? Pat, I'll start with you. I mean, obviously we don't know their price, but, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I think if I'm looking at those guys, I don't know, Leishman to me kind of stands out a little bit. He's sort of a guy that, you know, has experience, you know, out here and could be, play that par golf well. So I kind of like Leishman. And then Henley's, he's a great putter. I mean, Henley is probably one of the better putters on tour. So, you know, just coming in hot off of a win, but I'd like to see, we don't know what they're priced at yet, but those two stand out for me out of the four.
Otto, what about you?
If you don't have 100% Leishman this week, you are doing it wrong.
Oh, nice. Nice call.
I do not care about prices. I do not care about free play, anything. If you do not have 100% Leishman, you are doing it wrong.
That's awesome.
If you look at, he flies so far under the radar, how good a ball striker he is. He's always struggled a little bit with his putting. His putting stats have been awesome this year. You talk majors, what's he finished? Third in the Masters, just missed that playoff by one, lost in a playoff at St. Andrews. What you know, he can compete. You know he's got nerves of steel. He just, you know,
won
the API. I mean, he's. I mean, if I were to take a guess, I've never done it before, I'm guessing he's going to be around the 8,100.
I think he might be maybe even lower.
I think he's going to be lower.
No, there's no way he's lower. I mean, the guys that are pricing. No way.
I bet he's going to be lower. I love it. Like, I love the call. I like Leishman, but I do think he's going to be lower. Like, would you take? Let's do like a name game here. Would you take Leishman or Louis?
Leish.
Leishman or Sergio?
Leish.
Oof.
Wow.
All right, let's keep going up. Leishman or Bubba?
Leish.
Leishman or Rom?
Leish.
Leishman or Phil?
Leish.
Holy. All right, I got a feeling you're going to take Scott over Leish. Is that right?
No, I'm not. No.
Really?
There is nothing in his game right now. His family life, his human element side, there is nothing in there to tell me that he will not compete this week.
Okay, nothing. Leishman or Fowler? Fowler was your boy. Like, if you had to pick one.
If I had to pick one, Leishman or Fowler? You know what? I'm just giving him the Australian edge, Leishman.
I love it.
He has great. He's only made, like, if you look at his last, I don't know, this only goes back 10, 20 years, but he's missed the cut 3 out of 4 times here.
Yeah, but he's, who cares? Doesn't matter. He's
about
also
to F your course history.
That is his F course history.
All right, so what's McIlroy's?
But his one made cut was a T4.
Paired with Louis when Louis made the Albatross on 2?
He was paired with Adam Scott when Adam Scott made that putt and become the first. It's one of the greatest Australian sporting pitches that we have, obviously, back home. Is Scott making that putt, going off, dropping the putter, and massive. And you see Leish doing the same thing in the background to beat him by one.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I remember that. That's cool.
So I'm going to leash and love. That's it. Lock it in. Yeah.
Glad I brought that up. That would have been a major detriment to the listener. About to like all in on Leishman, and we didn't even talk about it. All right, cool. That was good stuff. You know, one thing we didn't even talk about, there's like 96 players in the field right now, and you remember, you know, top 50 and ties make it in. So if you're playing cash games, which we didn't talk a whole lot of cash, but if you are playing cash, be aggressive. I think that lends itself to be a little more aggressive for sure. All right, one and done. Baudo, it sounds like you're one and done. If you were going to pick one, would be let me guess, Leishman. Playing one of those.
Yeah, sure.
Pat, do you know yours already? Because I'm debating between two, and I kind of want to see what you do.
Yeah, mine's going to be Rory.
Rory.
Hey,
but yeah. Leishman's got a better course history than Rory. Why would you say that?
No, he doesn't. Come on. I'm going to go. I've been waiting to use some big names here. I'm going to use Hideki. I really like Hideki. That's my guy. All right, so Leish, Rory, and Hideki, your one-and-done selections from the triple threat here on the Tour Junkies Masters podcast. I think the last thing I need to say is Pat and I have been working on a tremendous amount of content on rotogrinders.com in the shot in the arm. We have a Masters cheat sheet, if you will, that will literally have a write-up on every single player. It'll tell you whether we think you should play them in cash, in GPP, both, or fade. It'll show their course history, their key stats that we're looking at. It'll show everything you need, and it is all for the same price that it is every single week over on rotogrinders.com, so be sure and check that out. Anything else you guys need to cover? I know it's been a long show, but it is the Masters. It's the best event of the year. So, Pat, you got anything else you need to add?
No, I'm just good. I'm excited for the week. I think it's going to be fun. I'm hoping that the dry spell ends, so we'll see. And that's all I got. Baudo, I do want to thank you for coming on. Always appreciate your insight. It's fantastic. You know, we know you've got a lot of experience on tour, and you know, your insight has been great tonight. So I want to thank you, Baudo. Appreciate it.
Well, thank you. That was very nice of you. Yeah, thanks for having me.
I didn't even have to apologize.
I got something
going on.
I got something going on in the next couple of days in the free play fantasy world. Come check me out at TGA Edge, and we're about to launch something new. So yeah, come check us out if you want to have a bit of fun and a bit of free play fantasy.
Love it, Baudo. Thanks for being an ambassador for us fantasy players, PJ Tour stuff. Also, man, you know, give our love to Amanda and Kellyanne, your baby girl. Everything going well? Are you taking care of the baby right now?
I am. The monitor's sitting next to me, and she's in bed, and just waiting for her to kick and turn. So we're going to go and pacify her and put her back to sleep here shortly.
Lovely. Lovely. I will say, too, we need to give a quick heads up, Pat, to our listeners for next week. If you know us, you know that Masters Week creates a large hangover for us in many ways. So no guarantees on the Heritage podcast. The following week, we have a pretty big event going on Monday after Masters that we will be periscoping live from Champions Retreat, which is a pretty awesome golf course here in Augusta. And there'll be some special guests hanging around, so we'll do some more periscope there. And then Tuesday, we're not going to say what it is, but Tuesday we also are probably doing something really freaking cool and hope to periscope that as well. So between that and the Masters hangover, not really sure what we can commit to as far as a podcast next week, but we will do our best, that's for sure. We'll be out of the course all day on Monday for the practice round at the Masters, so we're looking forward to that, and we will be in the chat room as always on the Daily Marketplace, rotogrinders.com on Wednesday. Pat, any comments on next week, or you echo that sentiment?
No, I'll echo that. I mean, I think that we'll do whatever we can, but we may take a week off. There, we could call in sick next week.
God, a week off would be awesome. We love this, but a week off would be great. Also, tomorrow night, Monday night, we've got our dinner with the winner, Mike Riva, your fantasy draft contest winner. It's going to be a good time. We'll be sure to tweet out some stuff about that. You guys follow along. Thanks again, Baudo. We really appreciate it, man. Wish you the best of luck the rest of the year, and congrats on that new little girl of yours that you you're monitoring there. We appreciate you taking the time out, and thanks for being a loyal Tour Junkies guy.
Thanks, boys. Love it. Always fun to hang out and chat.
All right. Everybody, it's Masters Week. It's going to be great. Enjoy it. May your screens be green. See ya. Out.
Check you.